Hi, my name is Jordan Joy.
It's a little bit embarrassing just because you're like taking a selfie in front of all these people that are like also coming here to take a selfie.
Peregrine Honig's current art exhibit at Ha Contemporary is full of paintings created specifically with the idea of selfies in mind. They're portraits, but they're all background and composition. The place where the person usually goes has been left intentionally blank. At the opening reception in the West Bottoms, visitors laughed and milled about, posing in front of the paintings. They stood so that their heads lined up with the empty spaces on the canvases, and with a simple click of the smartphone, they became the stars of the show.
My name is Michael Schoenhoff. When you bring yourself to a painting anyway, you kind of have to find your dialogue with it in some sense. In this way, it's a little more maybe physically activated or technologically activated, you know? But you're physically finishing the piece, so I like it. It's another level of engagement.
As for the artist, she chatted quietly with small circles of friends and acquaintances in a back room, leaving her crowd to bask in the center of its own attention. Peregrine Honig is with us today to sit for our portrait session series here on Central Standard. Hi, Peregrine.
Hi, Gina.
So the show, Unicorn, is the first solo show you've had in Kansas City in 10 years, which is probably surprising to a lot of people. I mean, you're such an active force in the Kansas City art community. Do you think people realized it had been that long?
I don't know if people realized how long it had been since I had a solo show in Kansas City. My last solo show was with Byron Cohen, who was a great dealer and a friend. His family's awesome. And I just had two solo shows with him. And then I started to show out of town and out of the country. So when Bill Ha took over the Dolphin, one of the first things he asked me was if I was interested in having a solo show, and I really wanted that main space.
What was it about that space?
The main space at Ha Contemporary is this beautiful museum quality space, and I knew if I gave myself the challenge of filling it, that I would push myself to turn that space into something that I had never wrapped my arms around before.
So that's really interesting to me, because I've known you for a long time and we're friends, and I know that you are not someone who needs a deadline or an external expectation to go and make art. I mean, you spend a lot of time in your studio no matter what. And what is it about that space and that show that changed how you viewed your studio practice, or maybe altered it in some way?
For me, having a solo show in Kansas City was especially a challenge because I am surrounded by so many people that I respect and admire. And it would also be a choice that I would be making to have a version of a mid-career show in what is my chosen home, Kansas City. And having grown up in a bigger city, having parents from the East Coast, there is that feeling that there's some kind of paradigm that having a show in New York is this penultimate. But for me, showing what I was working on and thinking about to people who I have had a long history with, who I respect, that was a bigger challenge. And definitely I knew that I would get more feedback from people that were important to me.
So in a way, like a solo show in Kansas City is even a more vulnerable thing and kind of a scarier thing. I mean, you show internationally.
Yes. The last solo show I had was in Buenos Aires.
And so Kansas City is like the ultimate audience in a way.
Ultimate in the sense that it was really important for me to give my all.
I want to ask you about a specific piece, because maybe it will help our listeners picture what this art and what this show is like. Disco Saint Selfie.
Hashtag Disco Saint Selfie.
Yes. Don't forget the hashtag. So maybe you can describe this painting a little bit. I mean, it's got mirror ball, it's got wreath, and it combines this idea of like a religious painting of a Catholic icon and the idea of someone dancing in a club with a mirror ball.
I was laughing while I was giving a talk about the show that if somebody told me that I would be talking about a painting whose material were canvas, disco ball mirrors, and oil paint, how awful I would imagine that painting to be. So I started these sort of portals of backdrops with this painting, very formal. The paint that I was using was as close to the old masters that I could get. My student from a while back, Jonah Criswell, recommended this paint to me. It's out of New York. It comes in small lots. It's very high-end. And it really has kind of the consistency and color of these European pigments. And I was working in these paints, and I was making these sort of Germanic flowers and thinking about cartouches and how we frame things. And my work is usually, it has a central figure. And so I just wasn't quite sure what to put in the middle of these paintings that I was working on. And I have a social studio practice. And a woman was talking to me, and she sat down in front of the painting, and I took a picture of her. And it was that gift that sometimes happens in your studio when you have a consistent practice. And so I really gave up the idea of being in control whose story it was.
So wait, can I jump in here? Because it was just the coincidence of a person coming and being in your studio and like kind of like the synergy of that positioning, and you saw something in that.
Yes. Yes, I was sitting in my studio, and the painting was large enough that somebody was sitting in front of it, and I looked over. It was Margarita, this Mayan woman who is just very interesting, and she was wearing this animal print shirt, and she sat down, and it was just this moment where I took her picture, and she asked me for a print of it, and it was epiphanal for me as an artist to realize that I was making something in the kind of in between a prop and a painting. And if I could make it read as both, that maybe I would be able to produce something that would work as both. So I had a disco ball in my studio and one in my home. And then there was Colby Smith had another one in the back of his truck. They just kind of came to me really quickly, and they were different sizes. And I started to glue them to the center of the painting. And I had tried silver paint, I had tried Mylar, I had tried silver leaf, these different reflective surfaces. And all of a sudden, when I took a picture in front of it, that surface as it developed, it almost made the person look like an icon or a deity. And when light hit it, it was just reflective enough to give this sort of saintly halo.
What do you think the words disco and saint, when those two words are together and when those two kinds of references are together, like the halos and the disco balls, what does it make you think of? Or is that even something that you can explain?
There's this great Lou Reed quote. It's, if I could make the world as pure and strange as what I see, I'd put you in the mirror I put in front of me. And it's interesting because people think of selfies as these sort of narcissistic acts. But the reality is there is a space between asking people to look at you and asking people to see you. And so with these paintings, it was this sort of beautiful self-consciousness of people choosing the image they wanted to stand in front of and who they wanted to become in this instant narrative that I was producing.
The idea of watching and being watched and showing yourself and being seen, these are like big ideas in your work. Forever, these are big ideas in your work. And I think it's really interesting because the boundary between your life and your art is very permeable, I would say. Like when you were in a reality TV show, I think of that as, I mean, you've shared with me some of what that was like. And I think not everyone could be on display with that kind of like continually on display as themselves and as part of their creative process, but also their personal life over that stretch of time with that kind of intensity. But that was in itself, I think, an artistic act for you.
I was making a lot of artwork about pop culture when I auditioned for that reality television show. And I'm an advocate for myself as an artist of mirroring and being on both sides of walls. And being on that show changed time for me in the sense that everyone who has an experience with a performance or a piece of artwork knows that it's a non-linear act. You don't stand in front of a painting and have a line drawn from yourself to the painting and back. It's that you're standing in the center of every direction and feeling your past and your future and your present tense in order to have that feeling that comes when you're physically and emotionally moved by something that someone else made or is doing. And the thing that is still hits me consistently that I wasn't prepared for about being on a reality television show is that it syndicates throughout the world. So even though I've had that experience, I've been reformatted to speak another language, and I still run into people from far, far away who feel that they know me. And when they see me, they look at me as if they know me. And it is an extremely interesting and abstract moment, because in that moment, I am almost an object. And so in that experience, I have learned the power of objectifying myself, not just as a person, but as time and as energy, because as an artist, all I have is my time and my energy.
That idea that you have become an object and in some ways almost objectified yourself, I mean, we're getting very abstract here, but it is super interesting as someone who early in your career painted very young women, in fact, like prepubescent adolescent girls, and played with this idea of what it's like to be sort of self-aware and also for other people to becoming aware of you as like a sexual being. And that it's evolved more into this practice of how we objectify ourselves and how we turn ourselves into objects. And through social media, on some level, we all kind of do it.
Well, it's a conversation about turning yourself on. And if you're not turned on when you're doing something, and that can be any form, it's immediately eroticized. But if you're not turned on when you're making something or doing something, if you're not physically and spiritually and emotionally present, you're not going to make something that's worth experiencing. And so when I am doing something in my studio and I'm not there and I'm not a lubricated machine, I'm not present, I'm not open, and these are all things that have innuendo, but these are real moments. And so when you think about the idea of even the image of the selfie, you think about young women mostly and the physical and vulnerable dance between themselves and the screen, which is a digital and transcendent mirror that 100 years ago, if you told people that they would have something in their pocket that could make an image that could go all over the world forever immediately, people would think it was witchcraft. And if somebody told people 50 years ago that that would be possible, that we would carry cameras in our pockets that would take pictures of our families, they would laugh at us. And it's important to get past the narcissism, and also the population that takes selfies. It is a younger generation. It is a very choreographed experience. And I have this idea in my mind when I think about selfies of the Little Prince. There's the drawing of the boa constrictor having eaten an elephant, and that the child presents it to his teacher, and the teachers just think it's a hat. Well, that's because when we see a selfie, we're just looking at the skin of what's going on. And especially with people who have a hard time being seen, they want to see themselves and what they look like when they're going through these different experiences. And so when we see these headlines that a teenager took a photograph of herself at her grandmother's funeral, it isn't that she's being disrespectful. It's that she wants to see what she looks like when she's sad.
And I think it's also part of just understanding that something is real now.
Yes. There is something that is unveiled when you are willing to document yourself in the experience.
Can we talk more about the sort of, there are a lot of things you do in your life that I think of as part of your art, but that I don't know whether you do or not. I think you might think of them as just part of your life as separate from your art. I'm not sure, but let's play with this, okay? Because you run a lingerie shop, Birdies, and it's a small store on West 18th Street in the Crossroads District, and you've had that for a while now, more than a decade. I remember when you first opened that shop, and shortly afterwards, you were really upset because someone had asked you when you were going to stop drawing, as though that was a natural outcome of having a successful business or a day job, a quote-unquote day job. And I remember you saying to me, and I could see in your face that this was very real for you, he might as well have asked me when I was going to stop breathing.
Yeah.
When you talk about these ideas and in your art, I also think about that in your store, when someone tries something on, you have a level of comfort talking about them, talking to those people in very objective terms about their own bodies in a way that people maybe aren't used to, like that candor around bodies is unfamiliar to a lot of people because bodies carry so much emotional weight for so many people. But you're used to looking at bodies and seeing form and seeing aesthetics. And I wonder if the conversations you have in the store are part of your developing vision.
7 years ago, I gave a lecture at the Kemper Museum, and somebody was the first question they asked was this customer that I really didn't like. And it definitely shut me down. I had just talked about 3 years worth of work, and this woman had this mediocre question about her underwear purchase. And it is interesting, the evolution of it, because it was a separation in some ways for me between what I was doing in Birdie's and what I was doing in my studio. I just got back from this incredible invitation to the Robert Rauschenberg Estate, a seed summit that Heidi Van from the Fish Tank had me as her guest. And it was 90 people from all over America. And at this summit, first of all, of these 90 people, 10% of them were for Kansas City. That was awesome. But the way that they started off this four-day lecture was that desire is the energy of evolution. And so whatever it is that makes you, whatever your love is, however you love someone else, however you love yourself, what that looks like is going to motivate you to be a more interesting and vulnerable and creative human being. And in this, having this business that I now own with Danielle Meister, and in the future of these ideas of early sexual identity that I've always been interested in, I'm opening up a second store called All Is Fair, which is going to deal with people who are transgender. And it wasn't until halfway through this show that I started to realize that I wasn't just dealing with people and their perspectives of themselves, but also this new way of thinking about gender. And these second puberties that this very specific group of people all over the world are going through. And I'm very much a fan of science interacting with art. And I'm very much a fan of science making people have better lives. And so about halfway through this year of planning for this show and making this work, I started to do a lot of research and a lot of social research. And in terms of having a business, I own a business and I'm going to own a second business. And in some ways, it is about the ability to afford to make my work and see my community through this very veiled window. But lace is the material of so many things. Lace is the material of birth. It is the material of brides. It is the material of babies being christened. And it is the fabric of prostitutes. So I love the fact that in my store, I'm surrounded by lace. It is something that is an incredible material, and it is inspiring to me in both my art, and it feeds into my paintings. It is similar to mirrors, like we cover mirrors with lace when people die. It is similar to wax. These are things that humanity, just as a group, if art is the ability to turn material into thought, these are the materials that I need in my life to think and make my own personal legacy, make a good body of work, keep thinking, keep what I'm doing a nonlinear conversation.
Peregrine Honig, stay with me through the break. Central Standard will be back with reflections on Peregrine's recent run-in with Homeland Security after she printed and sold a limited edition of Royals panties during the World Series. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. And we're back. Today's portrait session on Central Standard is a conversation with Kansas City artist Peregrine Honig, who has an exhibit on view for just one more day at Hawk Contemporary in the West Bottoms. To see a photo of Peregrine by photographer Paul Andrews, go to kcur.org/centralstandard later today. In thinking about things that you've spent the last 10 years doing in addition to making art and as kind of complementary practices to making art, you have a really unique way of engaging with social media. And all of these worlds have sort of collided recently. Having a store, being very visible on social media, and of all things, the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, that was insane. It's interesting. As somebody who, what was this term, like this idea of a social entrepreneur, somebody that has a business, it's not just about commerce, obviously. I know, you know, I was kind of calculating. Birdie's turns 12 on February 14th, and I've kind of at that tipping point that I've probably seen 10,000 naked women. You know, it's very, really funny to me just calculating what I've seen and what I've known. I've seen women go through so many physical changes, you know? So in terms of how I feel about having something as sacred as my business be broken up by big government is I'm spoiled. I surround myself with really open-minded, intelligent people who support me, even if they think what I'm doing is or isn't interesting. They're willing to be patient with me. They're willing to be advocates of me. And so just to have something so dramatic, to have something that was, you know, copyrighted, a K and a C being connected, being copyrighted less than a week before Homeland Security came in and told me that I had committed some kind of copyright infringement.
And this is by making Take the Crown panties.
Right. Underwear. Cotton, American-made underwear printed by Eric Lindquist locally. So here we have an American object printed locally and not something that's shipped overseas and then in bulk and then disposed of if this team doesn't win or that team wins. It happened 3 days before my opening. I think that would be when it happened. And so I was already, I had really planned for a kind of a sort of transcendent experience that week. I was already very much open and ready for anything. I had a lot of interviews. I was preparing myself to be able to talk about my work when this really chaotic thing happened.
So Homeland Security just shows up in your store. What is that like? I mean, I don't know what I'm even picturing there.
So we were slow. We don't sell liquor. And we, you know, as a small business, getting ready for holiday shipments, I thought it would be funny to make a pair of Take the Crown underwear. I had them printed. I ran across the street, had Jenny Wheat photograph me, and I had it just sort of go through Facebook, through Birdie's Bridal. And people stopped by. A lot of policemen stopped by. They thought it was really funny. And it was kind of an inside joke. We were not making a big profit. It was just to get people in the door. It was like literally the gum at the counter, if you will. And then I came in and Eric was dropping off the second round and they stopped him, these two men undercover, asked him if where he printed. They said they had a print job, got his information. And then they came into the store. Howard Hanna and Caitlin Corcoran were there and saw it go down. I asked one of the gentlemen what size he needed and he said a medium. And we were standing there, I handed it to him, and he and the person he was with, they flashed a badge and told me that they had to take me outside. And so I stood outside while they, I think it was sad. They were nice men. They clearly saw that we were no threat to a larger conversation about copyright infringement, that we were just a small business.
You weren't going to take down Major League Baseball.
We were not going to take down Major League Baseball. And just they came in and they asked me if I had a bag. And I said, well, don't you have a bag? And they had a Homeland Security evidence bag. And they put the they counted it out and they put it in the bag. And they're just, I think it was embarrassing for everybody. I think they saw that we were, there were 30 people out that day picking up shirts. There were, I guess, according to them, truckloads of inventory was being absconded from different business owners. It was, I expected at worst to get a cease and desist. I didn't think that what I was doing was going to cause Homeland Security to come into my business and take inventory. It wasn't a lot of inventory. And in the end, the humor in it was what saved us, because it was very scary. And they did come at my printer and threatened him and for $250,000. And they did put him in handcuffs. And while it's a funny story, it was a really scary situation. And you don't realize that you're kind of floating on this digital sea and you're putting all your images on these ships, and then these ships are owned by other people. And so our, you know, this 8-year history that we had on Facebook, which was Birdie's Bridal, that was taken down. I think it was taken down right after I made a drawing of a pair of underwear that said Royal Tees, T-E-A-S-E. And that came down. So, of course.
And that was after the Homeland Security incident?
Yeah. Right after that. I don't know. I couldn't take it too seriously because it didn't seem like such a breach. But, yeah, it's definitely been, it's been a wake up. I've gone back and read. I've read through Instagram. I've read through Facebook. I've read through their laws and bylaws. I think it's important for us to all remember that we don't own the history that we put into these mediums. And I've slowly been allowed back on Facebook. Like, for a couple of days, I disappeared, and then they let me post images. I'm still not allowed to post any text or like anything. I don't have an actual image of myself as my profile picture. But
are you unable to post images?
I can post images. I can't change my profile picture, and I can't write anything, which is interesting. So it's almost like you can see me, but I'm muted.
Weird.
It is amazingly weird. It is definitely puts me in my place as somebody that uses social media as kind of just a personal playground. It's not my playground. It's somebody else's playground.
You also posted some images of some artwork you made that are mini sculptures of yourself naked.
Yeah.
And in the history of art, nudity has been part of art. And in the history of art as well, there have been people who are scandalized by nudity. And it feels like you've entered this really weird intersection of those issues in a digital context. Like, where is the boundary between offensive content and artistic expression? And that's an interesting place to be.
So after the show, I was in the process of having these objects printed. And I had taken a class from Joe Cam, who is a ceramicist and a graduate of Alfred, a great teacher. And he contacted me and then contacted me again. Hey, there's a space. They have a great computer. They have a great room. It's 100 cameras in a room. And so I went with Mark Sutherland, my husband, and I said, I think I might take off my clothes in this situation, so if you wouldn't mind coming with me. And I had brought some of his horn sculptures.
But wait, okay. Huh. Why is it important for Mark to be there? Because you're taking your clothes off. Can we spell that out a little bit?
I am married to somebody who's super interesting, and we do a lot of collaborative things. And in terms of walking into Leawood and being naked in front of A, someone I've never met, and B, my teacher, I probably could have asked other people to go with me, but he seemed like a good pick.
Gotcha.
I didn't just want to take off my clothes, and I was holding my camera and thinking, and he said, you should take a selfie.
Can you walk me back also through the thought process where you think I might take off my clothes in this situation? Because that is not a thought process that everyone has.
Yeah. I'm not, in terms of the stereotype of the female artist being an exhibitionist and taking her clothes off, I actually, being naked hasn't really been a part of my creative identity. And I am feeling, at this point, I'm at an age where I'm hopefully not even in the middle of my life. But I love the idea of just being a human being. Like, I in my lingerie store, how many times have I heard, oh, I would have worn that when I was 20. Cool. Like, but I can tell you're 40 and you wouldn't have worn it when you were 20. So let's not waste our lives. Like, let's just like love our bodies as they are and live in them. And so,
and not use age as an excuse not to.
Exactly. Let's not use age as an excuse not to do things that we need to get done, because if you don't do them, nobody's going to do them.
And that's only going to move in one direction.
Exactly. Right. And it's, if you're going to spend your life worrying about what other people are going to say or think about you, you're really just going to be stuck and be stagnant, and you're just not going to be a very interesting person, because it's a very conservative way to live your life, is to worry about what other people are thinking and consider the loyalty of other people's methods of seeing and considering things. You'll never get anything done. So when I went to get documented, my first thought was that I often draw people in a state of undress, not because I'm trying to elicit a sexual situation. It's just that once you put a garment on somebody, no matter how neutral you think that garment is, you're dating them. Like, if you go see any kind of historical movie, even if they think they're being as historically accurate as possible, you still know it's the 90s.
That's true.
And there's so many rewrites of what was going on in history based on how people are feeling in a contemporary way. It's, you cannot neutrally dress somebody and assume that there isn't going to be a conversation about class.
So nudity is ageless and classless?
Yeah, right? I mean, when you surrender yourself in your life, it's like you surrender yourself when you're born, you surrender yourself when you have an orgasm, you surrender yourself when you're dead, and you're naked in all of those situations, or at least partially so, right? I don't know. So it's a moment of surrender. It's a moment of truly seeing someone for who they are.
We'll have more on nakedness and nudity with Peregrine Honig after this short break. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. This is a portrait session on Central Standard. Portrait sessions are hour-long conversations with compelling personalities paired with photographic portraits by Paul Andrews. Today's guest is artist Peregrine Honig. Her show at Ha Contemporary is her first solo show in Kansas City in 10 years. How old are you now?
I'm 38.
And so when you were talking about where you are in life and being at a particular age kind of influencing on some level this thought process about, even though your own nudity hasn't been part of your art up until now, exploring that territory, what does being 38 feel like to you?
Being 38, I've never been so uncomfortable in my skin in my life. And so it isn't that I'm a shape or a size or a weight. It's just, this is my body and it's mine. And so when I walked into the room and there were 100 cameras, and I started off in a Peggy Nolan bodysuit, kind of worked my way up to it. And then when Mark gave me that idea of why I would be naked, what would I be doing in order for it to be a conversation, it was interesting because it really is the most vulnerable contemporary thing that's going on. It's our biggest fear that we're going to be caught doing this thing. It's our biggest fear that it's what our daughter or our wife or somebody that we love or respect might be caught doing.
Our voters might.
Right. God forbid, right? God forbid. And it's so interesting to me because, and this is what's interesting, this is what's most, so what that object is, because even when I look at it, my mind is sort of like, what? What that object is I walked into a room, 100 cameras photographed me from all directions. JoCam fed that information into a very expensive computer. The computer fed that information to a machine, and the machine printed me almost like a three-dimensional Xerox in color and made me as I am. I'm an eighth the size of myself.
That must be so weird to see a tiny you.
It's so weird. It's my tattoos. It's the weight of my breasts. It's the length of my legs. It's how my hair falls. It's more honest than a photograph. So with that said, this very honest version of me, one-eighth my size.
Colorless.
One colorless, one colored. So there's two. The colorless feels more like a Yadro, like a grandma object. It's polyurethane, so it's very kind of collectible. And in the white one, I'm only looking into the camera. And in the colored one, I'm looking into the camera as if I'm looking into a mirror. So it's as if I'm setting myself to be desirable to somebody else by making myself desirable. It's very meta.
Yeah.
Okay. So in this gesture, which is when it's photographed, looks more like a photograph than the object itself because it is mirroring itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I take a digital photograph of this object, it doesn't look like an object of me doing something. It simply looks like a photograph of me taking a selfie of myself. So it doesn't matter if I'm under a glass bell. It doesn't matter if there's a toothbrush next to me because people think it's a dinosaur toothbrush. So when an article was written in the Huffington Post about this piece, the article was published with the image of me. And because it looked like a photograph of a woman taking a selfie, everything got shut down. And that it was the article that was given to me by Facebook as to why my Facebook was shut down. It wasn't the image. It was the article. So I took a photograph of it because I never thought that it would be a link to something that would take me off of their format.
Yeah, that's really weird.
It is really weird. So I wasn't the only one scolded. Everyone who I know who reposted it generously because it was a beautifully written article and very quick and very, very nicely written. It was just a surprise that it was a link. It's something that you actually quickly, they changed the image to an H instead of an image, but you kind of had to open up the article to see what was going on. And it is a bit humorous. There's an image of me looking at my tiny self. There's an image of me with a toothbrush. And of course, it's a new medium. It's hard for people to understand what's going on in the image. But it also, you know, when you are mirroring yourself, it was really the first time in my life as an artist that I felt like if I didn't publish that piece right then and there, somebody was going to do it in a couple of hours. It seemed extremely relevant and extremely new. And I have been proven right by the reaction. And it was not the male gaze. And that is what is interesting to me. And it is visual algorithms that shut this down for sure. But I cannot help but wonder, because there's no way for me to know, if I were looking out without a camera in front of me, how quickly the image would be taken down.
That's really interesting. I think another thing that's really interesting is that you've got this whole show of oil paintings. I mean, there are actually other pieces in the show that maybe we'll have time to get to also. But where the things that when you paint a lot of portraits that people sort of recognize as like the virtuoso parts of the painting, the part where you depict a living figure in this sort of both unique and recognizable way that captures something other people haven't seen or in a way that people haven't seen it. When you strip your paintings of that, and then at the same time, it feels very like that you're painting a process instead of a person, and that you're painting a form of interaction and something going on in our world and not a person. But these are all still portraits. Once a person steps into that, puts up a phone, takes a picture, then it's become a portrait again. And that you've taken, in a way, by taking the figure out of it, you've also kind of taken yourself out of it, at least in a really visible way, because all of the I don't know, the gymnastics of the artist, you know, you kind of pulled back. But then there's this other thing going on where you've made yourself so vulnerable, so present in this other format that is also about the selfie. It's really interesting that
Thank you. You're becoming
more vulnerable and more present in one place and removing yourself and stepping aside in another.
There's this great Rumi quote that truth was a mirror in the hands of God, and it fell and it broke into pieces, and everyone picked up a piece and they looked into it and they thought they saw the truth. And in this way, I feel like I've created these portals that however you make yourself is what you see, is what you are, is your truth. And it's the same with this object. It's as close as I can get to the truth through technology. And the closer that we get to the truth through technology, the more upsetting things can be, because maybe we see something that we were not comfortable seeing before.
Because we think of robots and things as giving us all this distance, like it's less human and it's safe and clinical and robotic.
Right. Like to make something that really wasn't touched by human hands in order to be photorealist or very realistic, I think it makes people...
And very intimate.
Very, yeah. It doesn't get any more like intimate. I'm like standing naked holding a camera, implying that I'm about to give my body visually to somebody else. So those are very terrifying things. I think people live in fear of their past, and people live in fear of failure. And as artists, in some ways, we are castrated, we are barren when it comes to losing the ability to embrace our failure, because we are responsible for the beautiful failures. That's our job, is to fail and to prove that it will still be okay afterwards.
How was this, in what sense was there a failure here?
I think that there are like these three problems that we have in the world. We have these really simple problems where the light bulb goes out, you get another light bulb, you put it in.
Seemingly simple, yes.
Seemingly simple, right? And then there are the chaotic problems, like there someone dies, the roof comes in, light falls into your house, like something to do with natural disaster, something you don't have any control over. And then there are these complex problems. And in terms of embracing failure, artists are really, we are the best at it. And we are really good at taking chaotic problems and turning them into complex problems. And I always want complex problems. I don't want simple problems. I want the kinds of problems that challenge me and force me to reach out to people who are more intelligent than I am. That's my hope. I want to die in good health, surrounded by the people that I love. And the only way that that's going to happen is if I continue to think about my failures as part of my personal and intimate and public and private legacy. And as an artist, after you're gone, all you have are the results of your failures. If you're doing the same thing over and over again, if you're not looking in every direction or considering what's going on around you, then you're just not going to do anything worthwhile.
When you did these Take the Crown panties that got confiscated by Homeland Security, there's a certain amount of irony in that it's the Royals versus the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah.
And you are from San Francisco. So this is like, to me, officially, you are officially a Kansas City person now.
Yeah.
Like if it wasn't totally official before, it's official now. Your whole family has moved to Kansas City after you. Like you as a teenager moved to Kansas City. And now your whole family is here anchored around you. Can you talk about about becoming a Kansas City native?
Yeah. My parents are from the East Coast and I grew up in San Francisco. I moved to Kansas City thinking that I would immediately go to either coast. And all I knew of Kansas City was The Wizard of Oz and Meet Me in St. Louis, that movies I watched with my great uncle Phil. And there's something for me that's a consistency. I have these amazingly talented, beautiful sisters that have now joined me, and I'm having just the joy of watching them fall into place in Kansas City.
One of them freelances for us, we'll acknowledge.
Esther Rose Honig. I'm watching Manya, my other sister, become, like, watching her, like, open up an ice cream business. Like, who would have guessed that my sisters, who one of them is 10 years my junior and one of them is 14 years my junior, it's just, it's a mirror. Like, I'm watching my sisters fall in love and learn to navigate these really complicated situations. And so from a creative standpoint, I could not be happier. And it, I think having my sisters in town, it's just, there's something so human and so wonderful about having these two young women be a part of my community and find the people who are their friends and their people and their foundations, because we are all up to such different things. And just to see myself in them, to have them see themselves in me. And it's so basic and it's so beautiful. And it's so much easier than making art in some ways, because it's just very human and very real. And it's
never finished.
It's never finished. It's the longest art project in the world in that way, that I don't have to worry about it having an end.
What is Kansas City to the Honig family?
I think that it's just been a happy accident that my family has come here. My stepfather lives in Minneapolis, and my father has Alzheimer's. And so it's just been a moment where my sisters kind of came to town to sort of help out. And then I think my stepmother and my sisters and I just realized that this was our place. And hey, you know, I came in second place on that reality TV show. And
A fine second place.
A fine second place. And I think the Royals did an excellent job. I watched, I can't tell you what a pleasure it was to be at my opening. I was so concerned that, like, okay, well, you know, it's going to be a good game and I hope people show up. But just to be able to go to my show and just, there's something that is great to watch your community come together for something as realistic and as unrealistic as sports can be. It was wonderful just to see people united and having a good time. And I was really into it. My stepfather used to take me to the Giants when I was a girl. And so it was really great. It was a good run. And I met a lot of people I wouldn't have met otherwise. And I cheered in small rooms and in different bars that I was really happy. And it was a really nice thing to be working on something as complicated as an art show, where I was giving myself to my community and at the same time watch something as interesting and complicated as sports at the same time, because it really brought up my competitive nature, and it also brought up this idea of unity and this idea of, yeah, I like it when my endorphins are going. It was really good.
Tell me a little bit about All Is Fair, this store that the second store you're going to open.
So Danielle and I love birdies, and we started to get these very specific customers. And these are customers that deserve to be treated with respect, and they deserve to have garments that fit them properly.
And you're speaking about transgendered customers.
Yeah, and I'm just speaking about people in general. And so we've had this sort of quiet influx of transgender customers, and there are beautiful outer garments for them, but there really are not a lot of first layers for a lot of these people. And because, like anything that's being introduced to the world, there is going to be these very banal, fetishistic conversations going on that are not very complicated, that are not very interesting, that are definitely not beautiful or made out of nice things. And so Miranda Treese has been sewing for me since she was 17, and her and her aunt have a really good handle on post-surgical garments, mostly plastic surgery. And so because she's been working for us for so long, and I have a great team of people, they're all Tauruses, I just have a great team of people, and I have I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional. It's just, I'm really excited about it. I have a space in the Bower. I believe El Dorado is going to help me do the lighting. Stephen Jordan has done a lot of our just branding, and I just can't believe how people have gathered around this idea.
Peregrine Honig, your show is open through tomorrow. Thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome.
You can listen back to today's show or any past conversations on Central Standard by going to kcur.org/Central Standard. Sign up for our podcast while you're there and stay current on our news by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @KCURCST. Feel free to send us your selfies from Peregrine's show. We'd love to see them. Our partner on this portrait session series is photographer Paul Andrews. You can get all the interviews and photographs in the series on our website. Monday, we'll meet Scrooge, as in Ebenezer Scrooge. Be sure and tune in for that. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with lots of help from Patrick Quick and Matt Hodapp. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend and stick around for Up to Date.